Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube network. I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, along with Travis Ryer, proprietor of Ryer on YouTube. Give it a like, give it a subscribe. Super content there as always. Midweeker here for Talking Tide, previewing Alabama and Vanderbilt. Crimson Tide comes in 3-1. It'll be a 2:30 p.m. kickoff over on ABC. Of course, that's Central Time. Vanderbilt coming in 5-0, Travis, ranked in the top 20. It's been decades upon decades since there was a ranked versus ranked game between these two schools. But Commodores have earned it. Knocked off Virginia Tech on the road. Knocked off South Carolina on the road. And they're not doing it by close scores either, Travis. It's they've got the fourth highest scoring offense in the country at 49 points a game right now, and they're only giving up 17 a game.
No, they're legit, very complete. This isn't like we've seen Vanderbilt get off to decent starts in the past, and they've been gritty Vanderbilt, maybe flashy in one or two areas Vanderbilt. This is as close to complete Vanderbilt, I think, as I've ever seen. And you outlined some of the numbers on offense that have just been staggering. Second in the SEC in scoring offense at 49 a game. Second in rushing O at 223. Throwing it for 271 per game with Diego Pavia. You know, defense isn't bad. I mean, they're only allowing 17 a game. And I'll tell you what, we'll talk about this, I'm sure, during the course of tonight's show. Situational football, man, on Saturday, red zone, where Vandy is like 25 of 29 in the red zone in terms of touchdowns, had the highest percentage TD rate in the red zone in the Southeastern Conference. And then again, explosive plays, probably more of it this year for Vanderbilt too. Last year, felt like Vanderbilt was more of death by a thousand cuts with that offense. This year, they're hitting some explosive plays at a much higher clip.
Speaking of situational football, too, wanting to watch on Saturday is going to be Alabama's third down defense. I mentioned Vanderbilt's got the fourth highest scoring offense in the country. Well, guess what? They've also got the fourth best third down conversion rate offensively in the country. They're hitting on 61% of their third downs for the year.
They are, and they're only giving up 35% on third, which isn't terrible. You know, again, You kind of look at this Vanderbilt team, you watch it, watched Vandy a pretty good bit against South Carolina, and then even last week against Utah State. You look for the holes in this team, even kicking the football. You know, they're averaging over 49 yards per punt. They've only punted seven times in four games, Vanderbilt, though. Their kicker is 5 of 5 on field goals. So, you know, you keep kind of looking around for some holes, some chinks in the armor. And it kind of goes back to that a lot of people expect this to be a four-quarter game at Bryant-Denny Stadium on Saturday, and we've seen nothing yet from Vanderbilt to suggest that there isn't the very real possibility that we could have a finish similar to what we had a year ago in Nashville.
You know, the meat of the Vanderbilt schedule is yet to come. Obviously, it begins on Saturday, and you know, we've like you've said, we've seen Vanderbilt – teams in the past maybe started out of the gate strong and then fade really bad. I don't see that with this team. I think this is a dangerous team. I think they'll be very good all year. Even though it's early, Travis, I'm going to go ahead and predict that at the end of the season, we'll look back on this Vanderbilt team more high. I think I'll look back more highly of this Vanderbilt team than the James Franklin Vanderbilt teams that went 9-3, which, you know, in the modern era is as good as it gets for Vanderbilt.
Well, I always thought James Franklin at Vanderbilt, not that there were a lot of teams on Vanderbilt's schedule, even back then, that they were expected to beat, especially where the Southeastern Conference matchups were concerned. But if it was even close to 50-50, Franklin was getting those type of wins, unlike what we'd seen from previous Vanderbilt teams. This team, this Vanderbilt team, has the ability to not just win those games and win them decisively. That's the difference, too. They beat the people you think they can beat on their schedule decisively, and then have that potential, too, to beat the you know, top 10, 15 teams in the country that are going to roll around, you know. And it's weird too, because we kind of went into last week thinking, well, you know, for Alabama teams in the past, Georgia would have been kind of a mile marker game. It would have been Florida State, then Georgia, and then probably wouldn't have really felt like you needed to check in on Alabama again until maybe Tennessee, maybe LSU, you know, late October, early November. But this is a full-fledged gauntlet now, man.
Yeah.
Now, this is just game two of that gauntlet, because Mizzou coming up, Tennessee, South Carolina, LSU. This is a hell of a run, and you're still going to be very early in it. I think Vanderbilt, to your point too, in years past, you always wanted to kind of catch this kind of Vanderbilt team that was fledgling, ascending Vanderbilt team, maybe in November, because attrition, roster issues, like you were talking about, you can kind of count on that. But I tend to agree with you, unless something happens to Pavia. Mm-hmm. I think at the end of the season, they could very well be kind of like what South Carolina was last year, maybe 9-3.
Right.
In a team that's right there on the cusp of something.
So anyway, folks, the Dallas Cowboys are coming to town on Saturday to take on the Alabama.
All right. Let's put it this way. Titans and Vandy, neutral field. Who you got? Who's the best team in Nashville right now?
Well, if it's the most exciting team, we know it's not the Titans.
Oh, my gosh. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at any rate, Travis, looking at Alabama going into this game offensively, obviously Ty Simpson coming off an outstanding performance in Athens, yet to throw an interception through four games this season. Obviously threw one against the Bulldogs that probably should have been picked. But nevertheless, heck of a start for Ty Simpson. And, you know, this offense is – yeah, you're still waiting for the running game to kind of get on some grease tracks if it can find them. But if the pass protection is as good against Vanderbilt as it was against Georgia, then Alabama's going to be able to move the ball regardless.
I think that's where I'm at mentally with this game on Saturday, is that, you know, the confidence in Alabama is that I really feel like if they need to score 45 plus even, and understanding Vanderbilt defensively, even in that area, is better than most years that we've seen Vanderbilt teams. I think this offense is trending in that position where they can do that, not just because they're explosive in terms of their weaponry, but because to this point anyway, they've taken care of the football. So, you know, they're maximizing possessions, man. They're not wasting possessions by giving the football away. So, you know, I think if it comes down to that Saturday, they have the ability to do that. And, you know, you're right. Where you would like the run game to really continue to flourish is so that if you are in that position in the fourth quarter in a game like Saturday, you kind of take the clock and control the game. But they did it in the final 4 minutes at Georgia. They ran the ball well enough late. And then they still got production out of the backs, even if it wasn't necessarily from the traditional run game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You remember when Milroe beat Georgia in the SEC title game, they were able to burn that clock with some runs too, a Milroe scramble, et cetera. It's the running game definitely needs to get better, but I definitely like what I'm seeing from a pass protection standpoint. I do think Alabama is coming along at the wide receiver position. You know, last year, and when it was Nick Sheridan's offense, the wide receiver room kind of narrowed, and over the course of the season, they were really just down to Jeremy and Williams, at least in terms of people they targeted at wide receiver. I don't think that's going to happen with this team. I think we're going to see a wider spread of target distribution to these receivers all year, which I think is a good thing.
It's almost like, too, they can get situational with some of their receivers. It feels like, hey, one week it might be Cole Adams, right, that complements their top two or three guys. And then some weeks it might be Rico Scott. But right now it feels like it's Lottie Brooks, right, to go along with Isaiah Horton and Ryan Williams. And you know, the guy at the top for the foreseeable future, you know, is going to be the, you know, Jeremy Bernard. I mean, you know that at this point. And I just think it goes back to even this week, if Alabama does a good job of protecting Ty Simpson and threatens even with the run enough, they're going to be able to take some chunks out of this Vanderbilt defense. Vanderbilt has a solid edge, and Miles Capers leads the SEC in tackles for loss with 7.5. He's had 5 of those in the last 2 games. Now, those last 2 games, Georgia State, Utah State. He does have 3.5 sacks so far on the season. He did have a sack against Alabama in the game last year in Nashville. So, again, if they take good enough care of Simpson, and Simpson in turn takes good enough care of the football, I think they've got that ability to score a good bit of points in this game Saturday.
I think we touched on this a little bit on the Sunday nighter, but let's talk about that rotation that's going on up front with this offense. I asked Ryan Grubb on Monday about the fact that this rotation on the OL, you know, not only is it unconventional to rotate at all, if you got 5, you know, that you feel like you can run with, most coaches like the cohesiveness aspect of that, but this rotation's expanding. It's not even moving toward a set 5. And Grubb said, hey, look, we're just not where we want to be, especially on the right side. You know, we've seen Wilkin Formby, a little bit of action at guard against Georgia. Obviously, the guard position is the one that they're trying to generate the most competition because they've tried all kinds of stuff in there. Brailsford and Proctor are pretty locked in. You know, I think Carroll may be a full-time starter at right tackle by the end of the season. We'll see. But it's interesting to watch these machinations right now.
I would feel okay about Formby at right guard and Carroll at right tackle this week.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also interesting. I thought Grubb mentioned kind of fatigue and stamina as a part of that too, maybe with some of those guys. So, hey, it's great. If you can, we talk so much about fresh legs with running backs, right? It's nice to come with those fresh legs in the third, fourth quarter. Doesn't hurt if you feel like you can come with it at left guard. You know, as you've said here on the show in the past, there's a couple that are non-negotiables right now. Caden Proctor at left tackle, Parker Brailsford at center, and the other 3 spots. It really is interesting. And Grubb's very creative too. I mean, we saw unbalanced looks. We saw jumbo looks. A lot of different stuff even in that Georgia game with those combinations that you talked about.
When Jeremy Bernard completed that little short pass to Isaiah Horton for the first down against Georgia, they were way unbalanced on that on that offensive line. I think they had Caleb Edwards lined up at right tackle, and it was pretty wild in there.
Yeah, they did that on a couple of occasions. So you've got to really, you know, typically when you watch an offense, you're watching rotations like you've talked about. We've talked about it, wide receiver and running back, you know, who's kind of in those positions, maybe tight end. But traditionally, you've got your 5 up front, barring injury or just totally ineffective play. No, it doesn't seem to matter to Ryan Grubb and Chris Kapilovic. If they feel like they can, you know, get an edge by going with certain combinations and certain formations or at certain times in the game, they're going to do it.
How about William Sanders, by the way, the Brookwood kid? He's getting got some action against Georgia as well. I think they like his athleticism in there. I think he can move better than some of those guys that have been playing more than him. And that's what this offense wants to do a lot of the time up front.
Yeah, that was something I liked about him coming out of Brookwood. If you watched his high school tape, that dude, his highlights were when he got out in space. And he can really move. And so, you know, when DeBoer and, you know, that regime came in and kind of looking at the offense from Washington and thinking of the screen game and thinking of how they run the ball, you know, one of the things you thought was, boy, Sanders is going to be a beneficiary of change here. It's taken a little bit, but looks like he's right there on that doorstep. We actually started to see him right a couple of games ago in some short yardage type stuff. Mm-hmm. That feels like how they got his feet wet, and the confidence is obviously trust level has just gone up and up for Sanders.
I do think by the end of the, I'd be surprised if we were still, if the rotation continued all year, that would surprise me. It's probably a bad sign if it does. Sooner or later, they're going to settle.
You would think so. Absolutely. I think Tim here in the show chat, by the way, thanks everybody for chiming in, says it's a long season too, especially if you're making the playoffs. It's a good point. You know, it's a luxury if you're able to get guys, 7, 8, 9 guys, legitimate work on the road, by the way, not at home, on the road. You're dealing with crowd noise and all those things like you were in Sanford Stadium, although the offense did a good job of kind of negating that, I think, early in the game last Saturday night.
They got the guard involved in the cadence. You notice they're slapping the center on the leg there to get that count right.
So. Yeah, going silent and things like that. So, yeah, it's a good point, Tim.
All right, the Alabama defense, Travis, let's flip over, and we could probably spend the rest of the show talking about what it's going to take to slow down Diego Pavia, this quarterback for the Commodores, who's such a threat on the run. He's a good passer, though. He hurt Alabama through the air last year. Big part of what hurt Alabama last year was Pavia throwing it. Mm-hmm. Kane Womack on Monday said, when you flip the tape on, he looks like a different, basically said he looks like a different quarterback this year. So just a dangerous, dangerous guy. And, Alabama turned Georgia loose on some runs outside that you can't have against an option offense with a guy like Pavia running it.
No, you talk about discipline being of utmost priority this week, and then you can still have it right and Pavia make you wrong. And it's not just him. I mean, Cedric Alexander's back. He had 2 touchdowns against Alabama last year in Nashville, 64 rushing yards in that game. Eli Stowers, 6 catches, 113 yards against Alabama last year, the tight end. They've got a couple of 3 wide receivers and Trey Richardson, Junior Sherrill, 2 for 45 and a touchdown against Alabama last year that can get the job done. So he's got people around him, but make no mistake about it. And look, good for Clark Lee, because Clark Lee, a couple of years ago, I was at the season opener in Nashville for Vanderbilt when they hosted Hawaii. And that thing under him felt like it was not quite on life support, but they had the priest on speed dial. Let's just put it that way. And this New Mexico State migration that came from Las Cruces, and it wasn't just Diego. I mean, this offensive coordinator, Tim Beck did a number on Alabama last year, came over. Jerry Kill, Stowers, like you said, MK Young is a running back that you'll see. Didn't play last year for Vanderbilt, but played at NMSU 2023. I think Clark Lee's probably a good coach, but he's a lot better with the guys from Las Cruces coming over.
I talked a little bit to LT Overton yesterday during player availability about Pavia and you know, eye discipline with the option offense. And Overton pretty much intimated that it's kind of starts with him a little bit discipline-wise, because a lot of Pavia's reads are going to be off of Overton or maybe off the wolf on the other side. But if that first guy that Pavia is trying to read gets out of position, you're already beat.
Yeah. And even if you play it right, the dude is borderline Manziel-like in space. He's not going to run away from a lot of people, but he's extremely tough and willing to be physical. And he's willing to take big, big shots. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Roberto Duran, the damn boxer from 30 yeah. years ago, right?
Yeah.
I mean, or Jake LaMotta from one of our favorite movies, Raging Bull.
Raging Bull.
You couldn't put me down, Ray. I mean, he's that kind of dude. I mean, you can knock him down a lot, but you got to knock him out. And I haven't seen anybody do it just yet. And so, yeah, I mean, but to have any chance, to LT's point, you gotta play it right. And you got to be disciplined in your approach. And, you know, make him beat you the hard way. And I think for Alabama, as good as Vanderbilt's been in the red zone to this point, you just can't allow explosives to go for touchdown. You're going to give up a few explosives in this game. You've got to stop them before they reach the end zone. At least give yourself a chance on the short field. Now, tough part about that is, in a lot of ways, this Vanderbilt offense is built for the short field and third downs and things like that.
Given what we saw last week with Damani Jackson's struggles and holding the edge against, you know, against the run, do you think there's a chance we see maybe more Dejon Lee than Jackson against this Vanderbilt team? Because you got to have that edge down too.
Yeah, funny you say that. Rick Morrison here in the show chat had that one queued up for you, and you had it for me. So it's an interesting discussion point. I would think Dejon Lee would be a tri-starter this week. Maybe right. You start the game with Xavien Brown and Damani, but I wouldn't be surprised if Dejon Lee's in there pretty quickly. I like his size too. You know, he can be physical out there at that 6'3", 6'4". That being said, though, don't sleep on these Vanderbilt wide receivers. I'm just telling you. They can make plays down the field, but you're more comfortable with Diego throwing it 50 yards in the air than pitching it, you know, off of midline option or things like that. I think you got to stop the latter first to make the former a bigger problem for him than it will be otherwise.
Lots of issues injury-wise with Quay Rousseau, Jamari and Latham. They're not going to be playing in this game. Travis, obviously, we touched on it, I think, Sunday night. Yaze Pierre, Justin Hill. You think Justin Hill ought to see some pretty serious action in this one, too.
I guess Kane had some interesting comments, though, yesterday, too, how they might get creative with some of that and trying to cover for some of that on the edge. You know, and you've got a triumvirate of inside linebackers. Sometimes we do see Deontay Lawson in some edge situations. My bigger concern, though, is rundowns, because you've lost your size really out there. You're Jamarian, that's basically what he was going to give you at Wolf. Yeah. At his size against the run game. Quay could do both, but he's a bigger dude that can do that against the run. So beyond Yanze, I did see some things from Justin Hill, though, even in the run game against Georgia that were promising. Yeah. I thought at the point of attack, you probably right. did too. So maybe it is the route they go on early downs. It'll be fascinating to watch how they try to cover for that. I was thinking, you know what? They may just ask one of these bandits to kind of play that role too, because we see Jordan Renaud stand up sometimes. Keon Keeley has that in his background, right?
Right.
So it'll be one of the more fascinating things to watch unfold on Saturday.
Speaking, by the way, of Johnny Manziel, who you mentioned, he'll be in attendance as a Diego Pavia supporter, as will the comedian / podcast guy Theo Vaughn, very popular.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't he dating Diego's mom now? Wasn't that part of his deal? Like, if
couple weeks ago, Cole Kubelik kind of broke that on the sideline for SEC Network that Pavia, if they beat Vanderbilt, then there was going to be like a date arranged between his mom and Theo Vaughn. Just phenomenal social media fodder, nothing else.
There's a lot, man. There are so many sort of storylines going into a freaking Alabama Vanderbilt game, man. I had one of my buddies text me today. You know, Scott Ellis, the football genius.
Yes,
from
yes.
The Greg Larson days. He texted me, and he's a big Bama fan. He was wanting to go up for the game and take his grandson. He said, Vanderbilt at Tennessee prices? Forget that. You know, I mean, like we talked about Sunday night, boy, the Tuscaloosa ticket man he's up off the mat. You know, he was taking that stand in eight after Florida State, but now he's got that chin up, you know.
The ring guy, the corner man, would throw in the towel for the man against Vanderbilt most years, you know, not this year.
I mean, it's crazy. And we got the Ryan Williams angle from the offseason. Now, right. Diego, apparently. Has made some comments.
Yeah, it won't be close, he says.
If we do what we're supposed to, it won't be close, he said. Wow. Hey, You know, the man can talk. He's 4-0 against what, Alabama and Auburn?
You know, this Manziel and Theo Von. I mean, when you see this kind of thing, inevitably it ends up being bad for whoever's involved with that, Vanderbilt in this case.
That's where I'm kind of.
It smells like a bubble getting ready to burst with all this hype a little bit, doesn't it?
It does. When little old Vanderbilt isn't able to sneak up on people, it typically doesn't go well. I mean, you go back to. What was that? 2000? Was it 2017 in Nashville, where the defensive lineman, after Vandy knocked off somebody, and you know, on the field after the game, they asked us, he says, "Alabama, you're next," or whatever, and then Alabama scored like 60.
Right.
Now, I don't think that's going to happen this week. I don't. I'm not saying that's going to happen at all. Simply because I would never put it past a team led by Diego Pavia. And I'm a huge Pavia fan, have been since got a glimpse of him at New Mexico State, and the Aggies went into Auburn, you know, and got the job done. So, it's just crazy to think about that. This is where we're at with these two teams in this game.
Vanderbilt is a 10.5-point underdog. That spread opened at 12, so it's come down a little bit. Thoughts on that, Travis? So over under, by the way, 56.5, which is way below where it opened.
I like the over. It was like 60 to open, wasn't it?
It was high. It was up there in the 60s. I was seeing more than that on Sunday.
Yeah.
But, 56.5 right now.
The only way I could see it going under is if there's just not much in the way of explosive plays. And I think there's going to be, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if it's a 28-24 game and you got four or five plus minute drives, I think there's the potential for some quick drives, maybe in this game. What was the number? What's the spread?
10.5. Spread's 10.5.
Yeah. I wouldn't mess with that.
I think the man's got that one and just right in the right
spot.
Just get his juice and walk.
Yes. And maybe the over, you know, maybe the over. Over
the. All right. The Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Moving on, we're going to talk about a few other SEC games before we close out the show. But first, want to encourage our viewers and listeners to contribute to Parker Covers Alabama, 501c3 nonprofit supporting wheelchaired Alabama residents. You can do it at parkercoversalabama.com. Want to thank you for any support. Ryer on YouTube channel, great channel. But give it a like and a subscribe. Super content there that Travis curates very effectively, including the Talking Tide podcast right here. Several other pieces of content that you'll like as well. So give it a like and a subscribe. Ryer on YouTube, Talking Tide podcast. Now moving into the SEC slate, Travis. Georgia hosting Kentucky, a wounded Georgia team. Favored by 20.5 over what I think is a pretty bad UK team. I think things are going to go from bad to worse for Kentucky. We got Texas at Florida. Billy Napier trying to make a stand against the Longhorns. Oklahoma hosting Kent State non-conference. Getting a little late in the year for those non-conference games, notwithstanding those late November week 11 types. And then finally, Mississippi State on the road at Texas A&M. Kind of a short schedule. Only 10 SEC teams in action here in week 6.
It is. I'm bummed that the 3:30 Eastern, 2:30 Central windows got both Texas at Florida and Vanderbilt at Alabama. I needed one of those primetime good bread.
Right.
And I know Florida's 1-3, but you know, there is some uncertainty with this Texas team, even in that situation. Florida coming off a bye week. I guess Texas is too, right? So,
yeah,
you know, both those teams should be ready to go. Be interesting to see which DJ Lagway and Arch Manning we get at Florida Field on Saturday. So, I'm very interested in that one. Otherwise, obviously, you know, Alabama and Vanderbilt, but now, how does Mississippi State respond to such a tough loss in overtime to Tennessee last Saturday in Starkville and now go on the road, you know, and see if they can get the job done there at Kyle Field. A&M now up to number 6 in the country. I mean, did have the road win at Notre Dame, which looks even better after, boy, Notre Dame just blasted Arkansas. Arkansas bringing back Bobby. Bobby riding back into town. Yeah. Well, he's been in town, but Petrino back in the saddle out in Northwest Arkansas. Good breath.
The jokes write themselves. Bobby Petrino.
Yeah. Coaching at Arkansas is just like riding a motorcycle.
Yeah.
You never forget.
You know, A&M, I don't quite know what to make of them yet. I don't think there's a 6th best team in the country. But you know, they obviously looked good on defense last week, albeit against an Auburn team that's struggled offensively quite a bit this season. Mississippi State, boy, how deflating to lose at home in overtime to Tennessee. They really had the Vols on the ropes. That's a tough one to call for me. Texas A&M's a 14-point favorite in that one. I agree with you, though. What's that doing as the primetime game? Why is that in the 6:30 spot?
I don't get it, Big Dan. I don't either.
And it's not on one of the big letter networks. It's on SEC Network at 6:30.
Yeah. So. Is there playoff baseball maybe on ESPN and ABC Saturday night? That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah. Gotta be.
Yeah. Cause there's playoff baseball pretty much noon tonight right now on the worldwide leader. I'm guessing it has something to do with that, but it's rough because, well, anyway, before the season, you thought, boy, I'd really like to have Arch and Lagway in prime time. Instead, you're going to have the two games going against each other in that mid-afternoon window.
All right, Travis, want to ask you about this as well. Coming from Vegas, this is kind of blown me away. So the total in the Texas-Florida game opened Sunday night at 54.
Yeah.
All right. It has plummeted now to 41.5. I mean, you want to talk about a drop. You don't see that a drop.
And I think Florida's getting one of their freshman 5-star receivers on the field this week. I think Dallas Wilson's going to be available.
Right.
Which you would think would boost hopes. But, man, Florida offensively has been dreadful. Yeah. And I guess C.J. Baxter for Texas at the running back position might be out, but they've got back. I mean, you know what I mean? I think Trey Wisner's been banged up too. Arch hadn't exactly lit the woods on fire.
It could be a
20-13 game, and you're still safely under. I could kind of see that, but that is a lot of points to drop on a total. Yeah.
What that means is either the man is going to be toasting champagne after that one, or he's going to take a real beating. It's going to be one or the other. See a line drop like that.
Oh man. That's a big one.
Does Kentucky hang with Georgia, or does Georgia get off the mat here?
I think it depends on Georgia. Is Calzada healthy for Kentucky?
I think it's been Cutter
Bowley. It probably doesn't matter. I mean, he's not Will Levis or one of these other guys they brought in recent years. But I think that depends. I'm not ready to say it's a big start for Gunnar Stockton because that Tennessee start was just a couple of starts ago. But if you go back and watch him against Alabama and give Alabama's defense some credit there, I think for getting in his head a little bit maybe. But, boy, he wasn't good. He wasn't good against Alabama.
No, I would think Georgia would just – mop the field with Kentucky, although as disjointed as Georgia's passing game looked against Alabama, I have a hard time assuming that's going to be a route because I think Kentucky maybe could play just enough defense to kind of hold down that Georgia passing attack. Georgia's still going to run it, but Kentucky will D up a little bit.
And Georgia has just been, as we've talked about, such a slow starter in these games. Got behind Tennessee, 14-0. Got behind Alabama, 14-0.
Yeah.
And you do that against a Kentucky, and it's 3-0 Kentucky after the first quarter or something like that. You know, you could be in another 28-6 type of game or 28-13 type of game like you were with an FCS opponent a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. All right. That's a wrap, Travis. We good?
We're good, my man.
All right. That's going to wrap us up here with the Talking Tide podcast. I want to thank our viewers and listeners once again. Be sure to tune in on the Sunday Nighter when we recap this Alabama-Vanderbilt game. For Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, coming to you from the Ryer on YouTube channel. We'll talk to you Sunday night.